the leaders of the universal affairs,
especially in connection
with giving knowledge to humanity about how to live lawfully under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vayam, we, Tava, of your Lordship. Deshakaranaha, the carriers of the orders. Aditi Jaina, by Haranyakashipu, the son of Diti. Deva, O Lord. Paribhuta, disregarded. Setavaha,
whose laws of morality
concerning the Varnashram system
in human society.
Vavata,
by your lordship.
Kalaha, the most envious rascal.
Saha,
he. Upasamritaha,
killed.
Prabhu,
O Lord,
Karavama,
shall we do?
Take
your
Kim,
what?
Anushadi,
please direct
King Karan,
your eternal servants.
So, translation. All the Manus offer their prayers as follows. As your order carriers, O Lord, we the Manus are the lawgivers for human society. But because of the temporary supremacy of this great demon, Aranyakashipu, our laws for maintaining Varnashrama Dharma were destroyed. O Lord, now that you have killed this great demon, we are in our normal condition. Kindly order us, your eternal servants, what to do now. So you can repeat. All the Manus
offer
their prayers as follows.
As your order carriers.
O Lord, we the Manus are the lawgivers
for human society.
But because of the temporary supremacy
of this great demon
Haranyakashipu,
our laws for maintaining Varnashrama Dharma
were destroyed.
O Lord,
now that you have killed this great demon,
we are in our normal condition.
Kindly order us,
your eternal servants,
what to do now.
So purport by His Divine Grace,
A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki
Jaya, Srila Prabhupada.
In many places in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord Krishna refers to the Varnashrama Dharma of four Varnas and four Ashramas. He teaches people about this Varnashrama Dharma so that all of human society can live peacefully by observing the principles for the four social divisions and four spiritual divisions, Varna and Ashrama, and thus make advancement in spiritual knowledge. The Manus compiled the Manu Sanghita. The word Sanghita means Vedic knowledge, and Manu indicates that this knowledge is given by Manu. The Manus are sometimes incarnations of the Supreme Lord and sometimes empowered living entities. Formerly, many long years ago, Lord Krishna instructed the sun god. The Manus are generally sons of the sun god. Therefore, while speaking to Arjuna about the importance of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Imam vivasvate yugam puktavan ahamavyayam vivaswan manave praha. This instruction was given to Vivaswan, the sun god, who in turn instructed his son Manu. Manu gave the law known as Manu Sanghita, which is full of directions based on Varna and Ashrama concerning how to live as a human being. These are very scientific ways of life, but under the rule of demons like Hiranyakashipu. Human society breaks all these systems of law and order and gradually becomes lower and lower. Thus, there is no peace in the world. The conclusion is that if we want real peace and order in the human society, we must follow the principles laid down by the Manusmita and confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So Sri Manavam Chu Manavo Vayam Tava Nideshakarano Diti Jena Deva Paribhuta Setavaha Vavatakalo Sa Upasam Rita Prabho Karavamate Kim Manushari King Kuram. So Om Aganat Vidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Kun Miditam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So I'm actually going to unpack this one final sentence given by Srila Prabhupada. We must follow the principles laid down by the Manusmita. But first I'm going to describe the first Manu, who is known as Swayambhuva Manu. So Swayambhuva Manu, he is considered to be the father of mankind, and ladykind too. Don't worry. Because he and his wife... Does anyone remember the name of his wife? Such with an S. What? Shaturubha, yeah. He and his wife actually emanated from Lord Brahma. And sometimes you can draw a sort of a comparison between the biblical story of Adam and Eve. Of course, Manu and Shaturubha did not leave the Garden of Eden or eat the forbidden apple or talk to a snake. Those of you Christians will know what I'm talking about. But there's some comparisons. Like you see many, many stories in the Vedic literatures, you'll find similar stories in the shastras or scriptures written down in the Middle East. Like, of course, Karna, he was put in a basket of reeds and floated down the river, and you have Moses in the Bible, a very similar story like that. And then you have Kamsa killing all the kids, you know, who were just born in Vrindavan. And then you also have in the Bible, the New Testament, of course, then the attempt to kill all the newborn kids because the Messiah was supposed to be born, you know, Jesus Christ in that way. So anyway, you see many similarities. So in any case, Manu is considered the father. And then Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shaturupa. And they were given the duty by Lord Brahma to fill the universe with progeny. And one of the things they did, of course, was having children. And they had five children. And very famous, very, very famous children. You know, there's Priyavrata, Uttanapada, and Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. And these children are actually quite famous, like Priyavrata. He was the one who made all the ocean beds with his wheels of his chariot. And an interesting story about Priyavrata. Priyavrata originally was the disciple of Narada Muni, and he was encouraged to be very, very renounced from this world. He had no desire to become Prajapati like his father. He had no desire to become king. But Lord Brahma had to intercede. Some of you know the Bhagavatam, know this story. To force him to get married and become a king. And later on he realized, better to go back to home, back to Godhead. That whole story in the Bhagavatam. And then Uttanapada, of course, famous personality because he's the father of, does anyone remember? Dhruva Maharaj. And then Dhruva Maharaj became a great king, great pure devotee of the Lord by performing austerities because he was kicked off of his father's lap. And then you have Devahuti, who was married to Kardama Muni. And as a result, they had a child named Lord Kapiladeva. It's interesting, interesting story like that. And then you have Prasuti, who was married to, it's a test for all of you. No one knows. Daksha. Daksha. And she also was a Prajapati along with Daksha. Of course, Daksha was very expert at being a Prajapati. He and Prasuti had 10,000 children in one go. And those 10,000 children, they're called the Haryashvas, they were actually convinced by Narada Muni to take sannyas. And then he had 1,000 children because he didn't want to lose another 10,000. And they were also convinced by Narada Muni to take sannyas. And then he had a bunch of daughters because Narada Muni never convinced them to take sannyas. Because they're not supposed to be sannyasis, sannyasinis in the Krishna consciousness movement. So that's Prasuti. And then finally you have Akuti, who was married to the sage Ruchi. So through these different children, he expanded the human race. Specifically, I mean, it's interesting in the Bhagavatam, when he was first given the duty to expand the human race, and was asked, Lord Brahma, where should we do it? And the answer was on the earth planet. But there was a problem with the earth planet, because the earth planet at that time was what?
In the water.
In the water, was submerged in the water. And so Lord Brahma was thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I gave him the duty to have men, you know, to produce men and women, humankind. And then Lord Brahma meditated, and who came out of Lord Brahma's nostril? Lord Brahma. So there's this whole story about Manu. So that's one thing. I just wanted to give the background. But more important, I want to unpack this last sentence here. We must follow the principles laid down by the Manusamhita and confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, it's interesting, when I say unpack, Prabhupada uses the word principles rather than statements or rules. Now, I hope you all understand what principles mean. That means the intention of the Manusamhita, not necessarily all the details of the rules of Manusamhita. I'll give you an example of details we don't follow, thank God, because there's one detail, because Srin Karaj is going to hate me for this. So one detail is that sannyasis are supposed to wear deer skin or tree bark. That's in the Manusamhita. And I don't think I could adjust to that. And there was actually one devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Brahmananda Bharatiya, if I remember correctly, who came to see Lord Chaitanya wearing deer skin. And which was actually from the Manusamhita. Sannyasi is supposed to wear deer skin, you know, or brahmachari is supposed to wear deer skin too, you know. Could you imagine that? And or tree bark. Actually, we see with Lord Ramachandra that when he went to the forest, he was wearing clothes made of tree bark. Somehow they pulled the cloth out of the tree bark and made clothes. And the reason for that, the reason for wearing clothes out of tree bark, do you know the tree bark? It's very uncomfortable. You know, it itches and it's just not pleasant. So when you go to the forest, you're supposed to do things that aren't so pleasant. Like you're supposed to wear the clothes made of tree bark. You're supposed to take your hair and mat it with the sap of the tree. Did you know that? So typically the vanaprasas were supposed to do that, but we don't have any vanaprasas in our movement who take the sap and they put it in the tree. Although Lord Ramchandra did that, and Lakshman also did that. Well, Sita didn't do that, because she always kept her hair combed nicely. But that's why the sages, sometimes they would look a little horrendous, you know, with their hair all like that. And that's why when Srila Vyasadeva was first called to have children for the Kuru dynasty, he looked pretty bad. Because his hair was matted, he was fasting, he was wearing all sorts of clothes. And as a result, the ladies who were going to have a relationship with him were scared. And there was born a blind person, and of course, that blind person was Dhritarashtra, and also a pale person. So, anyway, so there's some injunctions in the Manusamhita that we don't follow. Therefore, Prabhupada says, principles. Principles means the essence, you know, what is the reason for the rules? And in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we become absorbed in the details rather than the actual principles or the reason for following the rules. Of course, the reason for following the rules of Krishna consciousness is to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. I mean, all the rules are subservient to that rule. Of course, we can't adjust the details too much. I mean, obviously, if you say, it'll help me remember Krishna more if I smoke marijuana, you can't do that. I mean, there's some certain things that are inviolable, you can't change. So, getting to the Manusamhita, which is very, very interesting, because Prabhupada discusses the Manusamhita in many different places, and he gives the principles, the basic principles which he feels are most important. And one of the first principles Prabhupada talks about is protecting cows. And the Manusamhita taught cows and other animals, of course, but especially cows, because the Manusamhita is the one who describes that if one kills a cow, one has to take a cow birth for every hair that's on the cow. But also the Manusamhita says there's eight people connected with killing the cow, eight types of butchers. And what are those types? You know, the people who kills, obviously, the cow. And I may not remember all the eight. But the person who transports, the person who serves, the person who even condones the activity of killing a cow. Even if you say, let's say if you're visiting your parents, and your parents say, you know, I'm going to eat a cow tonight. And you say, okay, that's okay. Then you're actually considered murder, according to the Brahmasamhita. And Prabhupada specifically cited those particular verses of the Manusamhita. He specifically cited those particular quotes from the Manusamhita. So we know that those are the important ones for us to follow. I mean, sometimes devotees, they'll read the Manusamhita and they'll come up with all these different details, like you're not supposed to eat carrots, you know, Hare Krishna, or... And I like carrots, you know, I'm not going to give them up. You're not supposed to eat carrots or all these, and you get very ritualistic. I mean, some temples, they don't even offer root vegetables or vegetables that come from other countries other than India, like tomatoes and different things like that, tomatoes and potatoes. Tomatoes actually don't come from India. Tomatoes come from, I think, South America or something. Potatoes come from Europe. It's just very interesting. Another thing that doesn't come from India that may shock all of you is sugar. Sugar cane. Sugar cane was brought to India 1,000 years ago. It's not indigenous to India. So there's many, many, many things. Or even chili peppers don't come from India. Although, we're not saying you shouldn't use chili peppers. You can use chili peppers and sugar and tomatoes and all these other things. This probably really wasn't like following the strict rule, the details of the Manusamhita. He was following the principles. So other important principles mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the Manusamhita, and this is going to be a little controversial. Those of you who don't like it can shut your ears when I start talking about it, is the position of ladies. Oh my God. Maybe I shouldn't talk about this in class, but anyway. But not that the Manusamhita states in many places that the ladies should be protected. Did I shock any of you ladies? Protected, and Prabhupada also mentioned this in the Bhagavad Gita, and so many places. Perhaps this is the most frequent citation that Prabhupada gives of the Manusamhita. And an injunction of Vedic injunctions. Of course, that doesn't mean that the ladies are exploited or kept like slaves or anything like that. The reason for the protection is that the ladies are generally weaker. Of course, nowadays in Kali Yuga, sometimes you find ladies with big muscles, but generally the ladies are weaker and they get exploited by men. And the ladies are, many of them, forgive me, are more emotional. Forgive me. I have to be careful. This is the new modern day ISKCON. You know. Many of them are more emotional, so they can get exploited. Like if you go up to a woman and you say to a woman, you got beautiful eyes, she'll melt. And if you walk up to a man, like if I walk up to Shinananda, say, you have beautiful eyes, say, boy, what's wrong with you, Guru Maharaj? I didn't know you had those inclinations. I mean, he won't melt. he'll just get confused. So that, I mean, it's a fact. I mean, so the ladies can get exploited. And there's, of course, many, in Kali Yuga, there's many unscrupulous men who are utilizing different things to exploit ladies. I mean, like even Prabhupada made the comment that the whole women's liberation movement was basically backed by the men. And the reason for that is, Prabhupada said something very interesting, quoting, I guess the quote was originally from Bengali. He says, when milk is available freely in the marketplace, who will go to the trouble of keeping a cow? You ever hear that before? In other words, when one can have sense gratification without taking responsibility, then, you know, Hare Krishna, not Hare Krishna, then Jai or something, then why not? And I was just reading, actually I was reading the news the last few days, about how marriage is becoming obsolete in human society. And in, what is it? Oh, in the Scandinavian countries, 80% of the kids are born without, you know, without the parents being married. And the marriages that occur usually occur after the second child is born. And so people are just like, in those countries, and of course, even in, I guess in Australia, I don't know what the ratio is or the details in Australia, but it's increasing more and more that marriage will become, as they say in French, passé. You know, something not accepted. Previously, when I was young, and it shows how Kali Yuga is progressing, you never heard about people living together without being married. You just didn't hear about it. And if you heard about it, everyone's going, look, ooh, those sinful rascals. Kali Yuga. No, they didn't do Kali Yuga when I was young, but anyway, they would just point their fingers. And then recently, just recently, in the last 40 or 50 years, this has crept into society. Even in a country like Fiji, even in India, you know, this divorce. And another thing about divorce, the Vana Samhita also talks about divorce. It's prohibited. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the details so I don't offend anybody, which I probably am. Anyway. So, Manu Samhita is very, very strict about protecting women by the father, and Prabhupada was too, by the father and by the son when the husband takes sannyas or passes away or something like that, and by the husband. Very important principle. And it's one of the arguments that Arjuna uses in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, to excuse himself from carrying out his duty of fighting. Isn't it? He says, you know, if I fight and I'm going to kill all these men and the women will be unprotected and they'll be illegitimate progeny, you know, unwanted progeny, as Prabhupada said, and then the society will be lost because all the cultural norms will be lost. So family life is extremely important. And actually, another point about family life, which has nothing to do with this particular Manu Samhita. Prabhupada said that family life is the impetus for economic development. You know, for people to work hard. Because if people don't have families, or don't have a wife, or a wife doesn't have a husband, who's going to work hard? And we see in the modern societies, people are becoming lazier and lazier and lazier. And most of the work being done is being done by people sitting on their rear ends, you know, typing on the computer rather than actually doing some practical work. So that's another point the Manu Samhita makes. And Prabhupada really wanted that institute in our Krishna Conscious Movement, that women would be protected. And so another thing Manu Samhita states that Prabhupada mentions was that that different personalities, different persons in society shouldn't be punished if they commit some wrong thing. And he said cows, women, old people, children, or Brahmins. So, in other words, the women who were to be treated with respect, not in a heavy way punished or in any way mistreated, and especially the cows, the Brahmins. I should add sannyasis too. Sannyasis shouldn't be punished either. So, Anyway, and then also the four regulative principles come from the Manusamhita. You know, people sometimes ask, you know, why did Prabhupada come up with these four regulative principles? Why didn't he pick something easier? Like, you know, no water skiing or something like that. You know, why didn't he pick the things that are nearest and dearest to us? You know, listen, say, the whole society, actually modern society, is based upon these four principles. And these advertisements, even nowadays you go into a based upon breaking the four principles. Nowadays, if you're traveling, the airports have become liquor stores. Anyone notice that when you go internationally? It's just like abominable. You have to, even myself, I have to walk through liquor stores here in Sydney, or even in India. The Delhi airport and the Mumbai airport have become liquor stores. And then devotees tell me when they're traveling that their relatives, if they're going to see some relatives who aren't devotees, their relatives usually ask them, can you pick up some Seagram's? Because, you know, it's tax-free. Seagram's is a type of vodka or something like that. And so the airports and the billboards, or even in India, are advertising illicit sex. The movies are advertising illicit sex. And the media is desensitizing people. This is an interesting principle. That if you want to change the morals of society, you have to desensitize someone to that particular breaking of the principles. For example, let's take someone who has an allergy. If they're allergic to a particular type of flower, so if you want to start to cure the allergy, you have to give them a little bit of that flower, gradually increase, and they won't be sensitive to it anymore. They won't react to it. For example, in India, they had these ladies called the Vishakanyas. And normally people will die when they're given poison. So what they did with these nice ladies, when they were children, they would give them a little bit of poison, just a little bit, teeny amount, and increase it gradually. And the person became desensitized, immune to the poison, so much so that this poison was oozing from all their pores. And so they were employed by the king or, you know, by different people to give others the kiss of death. So in other words, they would go to the enemy soldiers and they'd say to the enemy soldiers, they were quite beautiful, would you like a kiss? Or whatever. And they would just kiss them and the guy would die immediately. That's where the kiss of death came from. It also came from Italy, where if you were bound to be killed by the mafia, they would kiss you first. That's how they would mark their victims. They would go, and poof, like that. Did you know that? Interesting. So that's where the expression kiss of death came from. So, anyway, getting back to the point, of the Manusamhita, which is very, very important. So we follow these four regs because the Manusamhita says it. And I was mentioning that modern society is based upon breaking the four regs. Liquor stores everywhere, cow slaughter everywhere. And in India, of course, nowadays, we have the Prime Minister of India who's tried to outlaw cow slaughter in certain states, outlaw the transportation. I mean, even India was supposed to be the land of Dharma. It's the largest exporter of leather in the world. And also an exporter of beef, one of the largest, I think it's the third largest exporter of beef in the world. So luckily the present Prime Minister is actually trying to institute some dharmic things in India. So that's where, that also comes from the Manusamhita. And ultimately, as Prabhupada mentions here, Varnashram comes from the Manusamhita. And Varnashram is also mentioned by Krishna in the Gita, Chaturvarna Maya Shrishta, Guna Karma Vibhagasha, that someone should function based upon his qualities and work. Now, not that we can apply the rules of Varnashram specifically, but we should engage people according to their nature. That's the essence or the principle behind Varnashram. So here in this purport and in the verse, the Manusamhita and the teachings of the Manus is considered important, and the demons like Hiranyakashipu or their modern counterparts are trying to destroy these, the following of these religious principles. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
My question is, Why are there these similarities between the Bible, for instance, the Bible schools and all?
That's actually an interesting question. There's certain people who say there are similarities because the Bible, or the people who wrote the Bible, heard the stories secondhand or thirdhand or fourthhand from people who had heard or read or understood the Vedic literatures. So many of the stories, like the story of the flood, for example. Of course, that's the fish incarnation of the Supreme Personality, Matsya Avatar. That's very similar to the story of Noah, where there's a flood because everybody is sinful, and then the Vedas have to be saved. Of course, they don't go into the Bible. It doesn't get into detail like having a fish incarnation of God. That would be pretty interesting if they had that in the Bible. But so we can understand that these literatures, somehow or other, are indirect and very indirect copies of the Vedic literatures. You know, through passing down from one person to another, you know the game telephone? That if you tell someone something, by the time it gets to the 10th person, it becomes something different. So, but you have some similarities in the stories. And also, even in the Vedic literatures, I mean, let's talk about some of the Puranas. They've been passed down in such a way that they've been changed drastically. Even the even books like the Mahabharata, Shripad Madhvacharya states that the Mahabharata has been changed tremendously. There are roughly 80 something versions of the Mahabharata. And the details are different. The basic story is the same. You know, you have the Pandavas, you have the Kurus, you have the Battle of Kurukshetra. But I'll give you one difference. In the North Indian edition of the Mahabharata, you have Parashara Muni come across Satyavati in the river, and she's rowing the boat. And they're in the middle of the river, and he says, "Hey, we should have a kid." And she says, "Well, there's a problem. You know, we're in the middle of the river, everybody's watching us." And what does he do? Does anyone know?
He creates a mist
or a fog. And then he also blesses that she will remain a virgin after that. And then on an island, there is a very nice little boy named Vyasadeva being born. What? Dwaipayan. Yeah, there's Dwaipayan. It's an island. In the South Indian, one South Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have them getting married. There's this Vayambara, there's a Vivaha Yagya, and it's all done very properly. So, I mean, obviously, because Prabhupada gave the North Indian version, we take that as actually being true. So, but the point is, Madhvacharya said that many things have been added, many things have been taken away, and many things changed. So, therefore, we do find some differences between the story and the Mahabharata, many of the aspects of the story, and the Srimad Bhagavatam. The reason being is that the Mahabharata was not really passed down in the same way through disciplic succession as the Srimad Bhagavatam was. And many of the Puranas have also been subjected to changes like that too. So therefore, we only accept those versions of the Puranas that are coming down through disciplic succession. Otherwise, you know, we see devotees sometimes go into all these different Puranas and do some research and everything like that, and we don't know whether it's a bona fide version of the Purana or not. I mean, we have enough to study in Srila Prabhupada's books, and in the books given by the Acharyas, so we don't need to just jump over to some Purana that we don't know what's right and what's wrong in the Purana. So anyway, through history, I mean, even through the passage of time, Krishna mentions in the Gita that the science of Bhagavad Gita was lost. This whole verse that Prabhupada quotes here, excuse me, Imam vivasvate yogam bhaktivanaham avyam. Vivas one manave praha, where Krishna talks about how the science of Bhagavad Gita, the science of yoga, was passed down from Manu to Vivaswan, Manu, Ishvaku, through the chain of disciplic succession. Krishna later on says, it was lost because there was a break in disciplic succession. And therefore, Krishna says, therefore I have come down to explain the Bhagavad Gita or to speak the Bhagavad Gita again to you, Arjuna. And even tells Arjuna that you were present many, many millions of years ago when I originally spoke this Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna comes down to reestablish the Vedic system or reestablish this knowledge. So anyway, so that's why you find things in the Bible like that, because basically, you know, a lot of the Bible is actually reflections of the Vedic literatures. Yeah.
Maharaj, I've heard of some of these differences from Mahabharata, where they say that certain things that we're used to hearing didn't occur.
Yeah.
But if Prabhupada's quoting them regularly, then
we accept that, because it's coming from Prabhupada. And what Prabhupada is telling us is coming from disciplic succession. Prabhupada doesn't just invent something. Because he's directly connected with Krishna, first of all. And secondly, he won't say something from the absolute platform that isn't coming from disciplic succession. I mean, like when Prabhupada is speaking, let's get an example that I run into all the time in Fiji. That devotees, sometimes they preach from another book on the Ramayana, which is called the Ramacharita Manasas, which is Tulsidas's Ramayana, which Prabhupada said, you know, and I'm very reluctant to say this in Fiji because I get in trouble, which Prabhupada said has a tinge of Mayavad philosophy in it. And he said, Tulsidas is a devotee, I mean, we respect him, but he's not a pure devotee. And there's a little tinge of misunderstanding what we call Sambandha Gyan. We were talking last night about this. Sambandha Gyan is the basic point of the Lord, the living entity, the material world, and all the things related to them and how they interrelate with each other. That's Sambandha Gyan. So because Tulsidas didn't understand completely Sambandha Gyan, therefore his exposition on Ram's pastimes has some details or some fault in it. So, so Prabhupada, when he's speaking about Lord Ram, he doesn't make reference to Tulsidas in terms of the stories. He makes reference to the Ramayana, the original Valmiki Ramayana. So Prabhupada was very careful about that. He wouldn't say, well, it said, Goswami Tulsidas says in the Ramacharita Manasas, and then Prabhupada wouldn't present that. He would present only things coming in disciplic succession. So the points that Prabhupada presents, we take as absolute. Because that was Prabhupada's chastity to the disciplic succession. And the points of the Manasamhita that Prabhupada presented, we take as very important. Although it may go against some people's grains, you know, like the protection of women. Of course, it doesn't mean that men have the right to exploit the women. That's a very important responsibility for men protecting the women. Just like in the Bible it says, it's interesting how the Christians use this one expression, you shall have dominion over all the creatures. It says in the Bible that mankind shall have dominion. So they use that as an excuse to eat all creatures, which is kind of stupid. I mean, you have dominion over your children, but you don't eat them. Isn't it? I mean, it's a typical Christian thing. God says in the beginning, you shall have dominion. Dominion means you take care, protect. What's that?
Lordship.
Sometimes it's translated as dominion, but there's different translations. The translation I had because I studied the Old Testament was dominion, but it's the same thing anyway. Dominion means lordship. So it doesn't mean that you actually eat them. It means you're responsible for protecting them. And so the men nowadays in Kali Yuga, many of them are just not responsible. Oh, another injunction, yeah, that I forgot to mention, that Prabhupada did quote often from the Manasamhita, was that one has to be very careful in the association with the opposite sex, that no one should be alone with someone who is not their wife, you know, a member of the opposite sex. Balavan Indriya Grama Vidvani Karshate. Prabhupada quotes that directly. because Balaman Indra Gramo, the senses are very strong. Vidvani Bhikashate, that even an intelligent person, even a knowledgeable person, he can lose his intelligence like that. Or Prabhupada gave the example in a typical modern English as fire and butter. You know, you put fire and butter together and you get ghee. That's why we have ghee hustas. Oh, sorry. Because that group of went on traveling Sankirtan and he ended up getting married. But he did it a nice way. Right? Krishna Rupa was doing Sankirtan, he was doing Sankirtan, and then Krishna Rupa won the Sankirtan prize. We said that at their marriage when I was talking to them, giving the lecture at their marriage. So, I mean, that's another important injunction. So the ones that Prabhupada brings out are the important principles. And how to apply them, that takes some intelligence too. I mean, there's the principles, but details can be adjusted sometimes in applying the principles. Do you follow that? That's why Prabhupada specifically here, and that's what I started with. He says we must follow the principles laid down on the by the Manusmita. He doesn't say all the details. Parma, you have a question?
Because you're on this track, I will reserve my question for later.
Oh.
Because you're on this track of talking about details.
Yeah, yeah, rather than principles, yeah. Yeah.
Maharaj, there's many, many people in human society, apart from the devotees, who are, you know, completely opposed to things like, you know, men and women living together without marriage or abortion or cow slaughter or homosexuality. Why is it that none of these people are speaking out against it, apart from the devotees?
Well, the reason they don't speak out about it, or many of them don't speak out about it, is because it's politically, you know, PC language. Ever heard of PC language? PC means politically correct language. So they're careful. First of all, they may not want to offend people, and in many countries you may get sued. You know, for these sorts of statements, or people will hate you, or you get attacked by all the ladies, you know, something like that. I mean, and also because that's their opinion. They don't have any firm foundation to base it on. You know, it's a subjective opinion, whereas we have objective reality or objective statements being made. You understand what I'm talking about? You know, someone could say, well, that's your opinion. You know, like Rupa, if you come to me, and if you weren't a devotee, and you said, well, I don't think you should kill cows. I said, that's your opinion. It's a free world. You know, and you say, well, I just don't like to hurt other living entities. I said, well, I respect that, but, you know, I don't mind hurting other living entities. I mean, I was just reading something the other day that really was astounding on the internet. They're producing beef in the laboratories now. I don't know if you heard about this. They actually go to the laboratory. Originally, the first hamburger was costing like $30,000. But now the scientists have stated, now we've reduced the price, you know, so we can compete on the marketplace. And then the comments afterwards were, you know, one person commented, well, now I can eat hamburgers without killing a cow. And the other person said, you know, but I want to kill a real cow. So it's all a subjective type of thing. You know, people have their opinion, you have your opinion, I have my opinion. But when something's coming from God, what is it called? Dharmam hisaksha bhagavad pranitam. This is a very important statement. It involves our what we call epistemology. Why do we believe what we believe in? You know, otherwise it's all very relative. You know, so we say we believe in what we believe in because it's descending, it's coming from God. I mean, He's perfect. You're not perfect. You don't know. You know, where's your knowledge come from? We can challenge almost anybody on the basis of what we call epistemology, which means how do you know what you know? Why do you believe in what you believe in? Well, it's what my parents taught me. It's what my minister taught me. It just makes sense to me. Like Prabhupada said, when you're speaking about the absolute platform, if you say, I think, you're a rascal. If you say, I think it's like this. Well, I think God must be very big. I think God must be, you know, he is big, and he is small, and he is powerful, and all these things, but if you base it on, I think, rather than the descending process, which is our method of receiving knowledge. So anyway, so with our rules and regulations, it's based upon coming from, these come from God, or from God's representatives who are empowered by God. So it's absolute. We can stand on those grounds, and we don't have to waver. Whereas other people, they can waver, because it's all their opinion. So other questions? Yeah, question in the back.
Christians, and why don't they stand up and say something? I mean, okay, people have their opinions, but surely the Christians think that they've got some basis.
Yeah, well, but if we refer to the Christian Shastras, we agree with the Christian Shastras.
No, but why don't they stand up and say something against homosexuality and being and things like that, like Rupa said?
Well, I don't want to get into the homosexual thing right now, because it's, you know, it's just too much to get into. But let's say against meat-eating, I mean, there's many quotes in the Christian Shastras against meat-eating, about against killing. It says, he who kills an ox is the same as he who kills a man. I mean, that's, so we don't disagree with those statements. It never says in the Christian scriptures, you can kill and eat any damn thing you want as long as it's pleasing to your senses. So, I mean, one can analyze their scriptures. And also, there's many parts of the Christian scriptures that were later additions or interpolations. I mean, this is a whole science there of what's called hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is another big word you could use to impress people. Mm-hmm. How to interpret the statements of scripture or of any book, hermeneutics. And actually in this gun we have our whole hermeneutical committee that's supposed to be meeting, discussing different statements that Prabhupada made, and how to interpret them at different times, whether they were statements of his opinion or statements coming from the absolute platform. Like Prabhupada one time said that he was taught, and he said this is a statement, that women have, what is it, 32 ounces of brain substance, and men have 64, right? I think that was the statement. But that Prabhupada was taught that by Professor Urquhart, not by, that doesn't come from the Vedic literature. So sometimes a pure devotee is stating things that may not be absolute because, I mean, for example, if you're driving with a pure devotee, if you happen to be driving with a pure devotee, he says, turn this way, you know you're supposed to turn the other way. Does that mean he's not a pure devotee because he told you to turn the wrong way? No. I mean, there's certain absolute things, and there's certain, and Prabhupada himself said, and of course this is a hermeneutical discussion, Prabhupada himself says the pure devotee is, he's considered absolute because he's repeating from Shastra. Just went off this. The internet went off for some reason, unfortunately. Too bad. I guess your internet went out. Anyway, so, Nishini Kovacha.
Yeah, two comments and a question. Just in relation to what Rupa was asking about before. There are many people in society who are protesting about the way animals are treated.
Yeah.
But generally their approach is really wrong.
Yeah.
Like I saw a video a while ago with a peasant. And they were protesting about the way seals are treated for their coats, you know. And so they showed this man coming up and beating a woman to death with a baseball bat and taking a coat off and said, you know, how would you like that? That was just, so it's kind of like a shock tactic, you know. A lot of people don't respond well to them. And generally find these animal liberation people that they like to use shock tactics, they do all these things and stuff. And just about Prabhupada's how he's very faithful to the instruction of the acharyas, is he's so nonamorous in asking Prabhupada about worshipping a dwarf of Shila.
That's a famous paperweight, yeah.
And then so nonamorous, but it's mentioned in the Hari Bhaktivinoda, and Prabhupada said, we have no such instruction. So because he hadn't received it, he should have backed his mouth to start his father's cup for, then he was interested in it.
Very chaste, yeah.
The first is in relation to the principles of the monks
Well, look at the example of Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus in the past in our Sampradaya. They were always protected by their son or son's husband, or not so much by the father, because the father usually passed away. I mean, Janakamata, for example. Does anyone know who she was protected by? Virabhadra. It's not that she was just by herself. And the other Vaishnavas protected her too, but she was always, she was never like a sannyasi, you know, like myself, just traveling everywhere and just like being alone, all that. She was never alone. She was never alone. She was always under that protection. So the principle is the protection. The principle isn't that they can't become Diksha Gurus. Yeah.
So then does that mean that in that situation, say for instance, this comes us at the point in the future of having Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus, that then become the owners of the society to see if they're protected?
Yes. You know, they can be also be protected by their brothers. Even though that's not specifically mentioned in the Mama Samhita, brothers. It says, you know, husband and son, like their father. But the principle, what is the principle behind that? Rather than just like the strict rule regulation. So they're protected by the society. And just like the candidate, the nice lady who's up for Diksha Guru, Narayani. Some of you may know Narayani. I mean, she's a much better devotee than me. I mean, she knows the whole Bhagavatam by heart. I mean, I have to use the Veda base. She has the Veda base built into her. I mean, and she's the only one in the ISKCON, I think, who's authorized, maybe there's one or two others, to teach the Bhaktivedanta degree. And she's been, you know, very, you know, I've known her for like, since I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And so she's very qualified, and the movement's protecting her, so there's no problem with that. But the principle is protection. How it's accomplished is a detail. You understand? That's why it was separating the principles from the details. Of course, we don't really have the prerogative to change the details that much. You know, Prabhupada already adjusted the details. I mean, Prabhupada, for example, Prabhupada did things, like he had women move into the Brahmacharini ashram. No one heard about that before, a Brahmacharini ashram. But that's just a detail. You know, whether you have Brahmacharya or Brahmacharini ashram, that's just a detail. The principle is somehow or other spread Krishna consciousness, bring people to the point of being Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada, because his many godbrothers couldn't envision changing the details, they were not successful. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he sometimes adjusted so many details. I mean, even, you know, there's one instance when it was a codicil the devotees had to preach. You know that story. And in Bengal, if you don't eat rice, it's just like you're dying or something. I mean, they eat rice for breakfast, lunch, dinner, midnight snack, upon waking up in the morning. You know, it's just like rice. Yeah, not just little, but I mean, the plate is like this high, basically. You know, so... So anyway, this devotee said, I can't go out and preach, I'm so weak. Guru Maharaj, I'm so weak. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, all right, so take some rice then. He went out and preached. So, I'm not saying, that we should do that, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And also, you know, there's another thing in the Mano Samhita, talking about the Mano Samhita again with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the sannyasi is not supposed to ride in a cart or a car, right? So what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur do? He got a Rolls Royce and rode it right to Radhakund to prove to the Babajis they should be engaged in Yukta Vairagya instead of Falgu Vairagya. I mean, so the detail he changed, but the principle, understanding, also there's higher principles and lower principles. I mean, it's not so easy as you may think. I mean, for example, the principle is you should tell the truth. But if someone's in danger and by lying you can save them, then you should lie. So even sometimes the principles are adjusted. Just like in the Mahabharata, we have Grandfather Bhishma, who was so addicted to just keeping his vow which is an important principle, keep your vows. And we don't advise people to break their vows, especially initiation vows. We have Grandfather Bhishma, who was so addicted to keeping his vow, you know, his keeping his vow caused the destruction of the whole dynasty. Of course, it was Krishna's plan, too. And we have Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was so addicted to telling the truth, he didn't follow Krishna's injunction when Krishna told him to say that Ashwatthama had been killed. So even with certain principles, you know, there's priority principles, higher and lower, and it takes someone with a lot of discrimination to figure out, you know, what to do, how to adjust things. So, in other words, being ritualistic does not, you know, if we follow the Manu Samhita, you know, every single word in the Manu Samhita, we'd be in trouble. Isn't it? Big trouble. You know, like if someone commits blasphemy, we're supposed to cut their tongues out. Can you imagine, you know, in the newspaper here, you know, Hare Krishna's cut tongues of people. You have all these people, pictures of people like, oh, without their tongues. So, does that answer your question? Yes.
So, Maharaj, you've already commented, actually, talking about the rice and the codicil in the Bengal, that Prabhupada had asked Hare Kesh Maharaj when Hare Kesh Swami said that, you know, there's no good vegetables to be attained wherever they were, Iceland or something.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada said, well, maybe if you have to, but go on with the preaching.
Yeah.
Just you've already said.
Well, that's a higher priority. Yeah, that's a higher priority. I mean, even we have the story of Viswamitra Muni eating the hind part of a dog one time. Do you know the story of Mahabharata? Anyone's heard that story? There was a big drought. There was no vegetables or nothing. So he went finally to a shudra's house who was eating dogs. And he had to eat the hind part of the dog just to stay alive. I mean, I don't know if I could do that one. But in many cultures, they do eat dogs. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I remember also when some English people, I guess from the government or whatever, were going to visit Mayapur, he was arranging to serve the meat. You know that story? He actually arranged that they'd be able to meet so they would feel comfortable. Oh my God. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing that. But so, in other words, it takes some discrimination. It's not really just cut and dried, you know, rituals and things like that. There's discrimination. Yeah.
Raj, before we're talking about protection of the women, it seems like in Kali Yuga it's dangerous, that no, the men, for all of us to be by ourselves, that's also dangerous, that we need constant protection as well, you know, association.
Yeah.
For us to be by ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, everybody needs to be in the association of devotees. But I don't think you are so emotionally vulnerable. I mean, like I gave the example, you know, Rupa, I say, what nice eyes you have. I'm not going to be able to control you by that. I may be able to control you by saying, what a good Sankirtan devotee you are. But, and you know, the men are vulnerable too, obviously. I mean, if some beautiful lady comes and waves her eyelashes at you, not you. Or like you have Viswamitra Muni, and one of Manika came down and she just jangled her ankle bells, you know, like an RT bell or something like that. He immediately just came out of his meditation and said, wow. So, you know, in Kali Yuga, of course, Kaloshuddha Sambhavan, another point is, yeah, in accordance with what you said, everyone in Kali Yuga is Shudra. Men, women, everybody is the lower caste. Of course, samskara bhavet trijam. If someone has a proper samskara, if a lady becomes a Vaishnavi, she becomes more intelligent. That's another point. So you know, don't want to discourage the ladies. Because Prabhupada said, a woman is more intelligent when she becomes a Vaishnavi. If a woman thinks she's a woman, then there's a problem there. Yeah.
Just on this point about women being protected, just an additional point is that I see it's important that women is protected because the women make babies. So you're talking about whether men can be vulnerable or women can be vulnerable. The women, in this Kali Yuga, men and women may, their roles may be mixed. The women may be more fixed up than the man, and the man could be vulnerable and so on. But if the man, if someone takes advantage of a man, okay, he's wounded, he's all like, I got taken advantage of. But if someone takes advantage of a woman, she can easily produce.
That's right, the problem made that
soul point. Involved. It's not just about the woman anymore, it's about the soul of the baby. In that case, and in this age, we were saying, oh, I've got the rights, if I want to be people to take advantage of me, I want them to, that's my choice. That's fine, but they're getting a baby involved in that, and they're affecting another soul, and that's a part, it's not really her rights, and it's a child protection issue then. And there's a whole other discussion about that, whether the child should be protected in the womb or not, or whether it's,
Prabhupada actually made that point. He said the men can just, like, go away. He said, the women want equality, but the men can just go away. And then the lady is left with a child, and then the government has to pay for it. And we see that oftentimes. The men just leave, and the poor lady has, four or five kids. And she just has to beg from the government. That's actually a very bad thing, yeah.
I just have a question about how you unpack the word principle.
Yeah.
So, there's this issue about, the books have been changed and edited and all of that, which you did talk about yesterday to some extent.
Yeah.
And there are a few prominent disciples of Prabhupada who are following, who are reading for their own sadhana mostly from Prabhupada's direct books that haven't been edited.
Even the direct books, even the original publications were edited, and the editors made so many mistakes, and that's what's being corrected.
Okay.
I mean, Prabhupada made some mistakes. Originally, the editors, who like Hayagriva, couldn't understand Prabhupada's English. And so they, what was that typical one of the planet of the
trees?
Planet of the trees. It was pit trees. Pit tree loka? So they said, the planet, so they heard it, pit trees. So the planet of the pit trees. So they heard the planet of the trees. And so they wrote down like that. So obviously that's be correct. Some of the original books, there was the wrong Sanskrit for the wrong verse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the stance we should take? We've got books easily available by the BBT, which we are using here.
I think both versions are fine. I mean, I don't have any problem. I mean, I like reading the original version, I like the new version. They're both Prabhupada, they're both representing Prabhupada.
When we come to each word, for example, then, if one word even has been changed.
But Prabhupada actually said that, he trusted Jayadwaita Maharaj.
Okay.
Prabhupada made that statement to make whatever adjustments. Mm-hmm. So because of that statement, I also trust Jayadwaita Maharaj. Because you can't ignore Prabhupada's statement saying that I trust Jayadwaita Maharaj. Yeah.
Just backtracking to that comment of Krishnarupa that you said there, the men are supporting the women's liberation movement so they can just, shop in the marketplace and not take any responsibility.
Yeah.
Now they're even scientifically producing babies in tubes so they can eventually do without the mothers altogether, isn't it? So, therefore, this very important principle of women protection, people often look at our movement. I've had comments to me saying, I visited your farm and we don't like the way you treat women.
Yeah.
Now, because they see segregation in the room and the temple and perhaps men and women not always talking together, they see it as abnormal. So, but it's a very important principle.
Yeah. So we can explain the reason behind. If we can't explain the reason behind the principles, then we shouldn't be preaching. There's a reason we do everything. If we just do it because, that's the way we do it. Why do you put the tilak on? Well, that's the way I do it. Then it just becomes like the war paint in the Indian, American Indians. So when you put tilak on, you should be thinking what you're doing while you're doing it. When you chant, you should be thinking what you're doing. And, why do we have men and women on different sides of the temple room? Because Balavanandri Rama, Vibhikashan, I mean, many people, even in ISKCON, most romances start in the kitchen, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, the Didi kitchen, which is supposed to be one of the most sacred places, it's Radharani's kitchen, and then there's an imitation Radha and Krishna in there. You know, I hear this all the time, you know, a man says to the woman, you're my Radha. And the woman says, you're my Krishna. Ugh. You know, they should say, you're my Malecha. You're my Malachini. So, you know, you put them together in the kitchen. What do you expect to happen? Right? I mean, just like in the army, these armies, they have integrated forces, you know, between men and women. And then one of the biggest problems on the ships in the Navy is that the women are getting pregnant. I said, what do you expect? You know, you put them together on the ship, you know, they're in this isolated place with the same woman all the time, and they're in the office, and she's a secretary. I mean, what do you expect to happen? I mean, it's biological. You know, if you eat something, you'll get, you know, if it has some bacteria in it, you're going to get sick. You know, what can you do? I mean, things, they're definite biological facts, you know. What do they call it? Yeah, the birds and the bees. Yes, okay.
I want to make a question that could be quite controversial there.
Uh-oh.
The biological, it's natural, you said it's there, it's in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I'm personally a little bit objectionable to sannyasis who travel. I like the fact that Jayaprataka Maharaj always had his assistant with him.
Yeah.
In the case of the former GBC in this country, yeah. My spiritual master, he was often traveling alone. You say you travel alone. I'm kind of a little bit personally objectionable to that. I want to know why the sannyasis can't travel with an assistant at all times.
Are you volunteering? Are you volunteering to pay for me to have an assistant travel? I'll accept that immediately. Thank you very much, Bob.
It should have come down to an economical consideration.
Well, it. I mean, I tell you, with us poorer sannyasis, it does come down. You know, I'm not a high roller.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we got the high roller sannyasis, and I'm not mentioning any names, but you mentioned someone's names. And they have the money. I mean, it's expensive to travel. I'm always thinking, you know, I spend hours on the internet planning each trip to save Krishna's money. Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously. So. Plus, wherever I go, I'm protected. I'm in the airplane. It's very little will happen in the airplane, usually. Usually, there's some really big, heavy woman who sits next to me, and she's taking up half of my seat because... And I just have to... Anyway, I'm not going to mention what.
Sorry about that. It's
yeah, but I'm just telling you the practical realities of it.
Yeah, but I still feel that I should.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy. If you volunteer to sponsor that, it will happen immediately. But it's not, you know, there's finances, you know, another consideration. And then if I take a brahmachari out of the temple, then I'll get condemned, I'll get censured by the GBC. You know, there's other things like that. With those of us who don't have a lot of brahmachari disciples, 99.99% of all my disciples are grihasthas. If they were brahmacharis, they'd have gotten married.
It may sound a little bit, I don't put the full size in there, but these are natural biological things.
Yeah, it's natural biological, but wherever I go, I'm never alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm never alone. I mean, I don't stay in hotels. I'm always staying in someone's house. There's always a man there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only in the airplane.
Yes.
And so I'm really not too worried about what's going to happen in the airplane. I mean, what happened to me the other day in the airplane was kind of freaky. I told the story. I was going in somewhere where I was wearing Western clothes, and I had my saffron bee bag, and a man came up and propositioned me. He said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "Chanting Hare Krishna." So, at that point, I had most of my bead bags, not this one, brown, turned the color brown, so I wouldn't get in trouble. So basically, I mean, with myself and most of the devotees, it's just the airplane. You know, I'm not too afraid of what's going to happen in the airplane. Because when I go to the airport, there's always a man there taking me to the airport. you know, I'm staying over at Nishigananda's house, he's protecting me from Kishori. He stands there with a gun, you know, just don't go near Guru Maharaj. So, when I go over to your house, you're there, so you protect me from your wife. So, you know, there's always someone there. I'm very careful. Devotees say I'm very careful because even if, you know, a lady wants to meet with me, he said, no, I'm not going to meet alone. Kishori will tell you that. You know, I remember in Lotoka, she wanted to meet with me before when she was a new bhakti. Yeah. Remember me there? And I just insisted there was someone else there. You know, and sometimes, you know, someone will knock on the door, I have to meet with you, Guru Maharaj. I said, you find someone. So I'm very careful about that. I think if someone's careful, being in a plane is not really the issue. So that's my answer.
Thank you for saying that.
And not staying in hotels alone either. Not staying in hotels, that shouldn't go on. They shouldn't be staying in hotels alone. So they should always be staying with people where there's a van. And then, you know, then I always have people like the Shingananda's here. And then I go to Sydney and have Krishna Vijay who's there. You know, I stay with their family. I'm usually staying with families. And because they have the best. The brahmacharis don't have good facilities, so I don't stay with them. Because if I stay with a brahmachari, there's no toilet paper, no toilet seat, the toilet doesn't flush, you know, all this is... Originally in the brahmachari ashram, I mean, you had to use a bucket to flush it. You remember that?
Where was that at?
Everywhere in America in the early days. We didn't have money. So, anyway, so I try to understand the principle, yeah.
Just that, like you said, that you require some intelligence to, you know, interpret the Manu Sangeeta in context and all of that. And at the time you said that that's why we have gurus.
Yeah.
And that the advanced Vaishnava who is used for that.
Yeah, I mean, and Prabhupada has actually done all those
adjustments
or interpretations. From I think we have to end now because it's time for prasadam. And I'm going over to someone's house and the Shivananda will protect me. He's bigger than me. He's capable of protecting me in every circumstance.